to make a quorum at this particular point, and it is slightly after 1 o'clock, and we did get late lunch, so I appreciate your being here timely, and I do want to recognize that Representatives Boquist and Olson were called away. Representative Boquist may be back a little bit later, but was called away, and I know that other representatives have places to be. Let's see. Let me just... We'll open a work session on House Bill 3232. Let's see, 3232 is Elizabeth Martin Mahar. Colleagues, this is the bill that we heard from industry. Tektronix was in yesterday. Mark Majeski. This is the bill to increase to $1 million. Let's see, credit, I'm sorry, from $500,000 to $750,000 began in 2006. The amount of the research and development credit available of the 1989 research and development credit, the credit is equal to 5% of the eligible research expenses for the corporation based upon a calculation, incremental calculation of increased qualified research activities. Elizabeth?
Chairman Butler and committee members, with House Bill 3232, again, this is just going up to $1 million as far as the annual cap on the R&D. And so everyone's clear, under current law, we will go to $750,000 beginning in tax year 2006. We're currently at $500,000. That was part of our bill last session, was to increase that cap. That was one component, as well as broadening the base and allowing our eligible research expenses to conform with federal law. So basically that's what we have now is federal law conformity of research expenses, and we will be at $750,000 in 2006, and we're at $500,000 now. This is just going to $1 million, increasing $250,000 beginning tax year 2008. So that's the reason why there is no revenue impact this biennium, and it begins in 2008-09 as far as the revenue loss, and it's roughly... $1.2 million in 2008-09. In 2009-10, it goes up to $1.3 million. And then by 2010-11 fiscal year, it's $1.4 million. And basically, I'm assuming there that roughly between 6 and 12 corporations will actually be claiming this increased amount that would have the eligible expenses to go from $750,000 up to $1 million. And it's also assumed that 50% of this increased credit amount allowed would not also be used just due to insufficient corporate tax liability. So that's what we've seen with this credit, is that there's a lot of unused credit, and that's what we discussed yesterday and things.
Colleagues, we're in work session on House Bill 3232. Representative Berger.
Mr. Chair, we heard good testimony on this bill yesterday, and I remember from last session good discussion on R&D. I would like to move House Bill 3232 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
You've heard the motion of Representative Berger to move House Bill 3232 to the full House with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion on the motion? Let's go ahead and have clerk call a roll, recognizing that Representatives Olson and Boquist are excused.
Representative Esquivel.
Aye.
Representative Galizio.
Aye.
Representative Kahn.
Aye.
Representative Riley.
Aye.
Vice Chair Berger.
Aye.
Chair Butler.
Aye. Butler votes
Representative
aye.
Representative Kahn, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
I didn't see you from there.
Bring pardon.
Aye.
Thank you.
Colleagues, House Bill 3232, having received the necessary majority to pass to the House, is passed to the House with a due pass recommendation. Volunteer for carrier on that. Representative Berger, would you carry that, please, to the floor? Thank you very much. We will close the work session on House Bill 3232. Now, colleagues, my understanding is that we have some amendments that are in, Paul, on 2868, relative to the qualifying forest land for small tract forest lands assessment, that there are amendments being prepared on that bill, but they are not yet ready.
Okay.
Well, Okay, we'll come back up then to House Bill 2257. We'll open a work session on House Bill 2257. Mary?
This is a work session.
I apologize, Mr. Chair, and members, for such a simple bill. I've actually made an error in what the bill does. It corrects statutory references to other statutes. Very simple bill, actually. The current law is that bonds should be subjected to the same process of executive recommendations and legislative approval as the process by which the biennial budget is recommended and approved. For each biennium, each state agency authorized to issue general obligation bonds or revenue bonds or certificates of participation or other financing agreements shall report to the governor its plans for issuing bonded indebtedness. The governor, under advisement from the state treasurer, shall recommend a total level of bonded indebtedness for the next biennium. The House Bill 2255 will delete two provisions, which really have no impact because they refer to other statutes. They're not being... it refers to 286505 and to 2286.545, which are the amended changes, so it was a redundancy there. That is being deleted, and it simplifies the language. The deletion of 407.505 and 407.325 from ORS 286.535 has no revenue impact because these particular statutes have not been repealed, and they were not intended to be here in ORS 286.535. They deal specifically with the fact that they deal with the Director of Veteran Affairs and how he determines that an applicant's loan has been approved or not. And they pertain to how the Director of Veteran Affairs shall prescribe periodically interest rates to be paid. So those provisions that are being deleted under this proposal really are not being repealed. They just belong somewhere else.
Colleagues, we're in a work session on House Bill 2257. You've heard the explanation of the changes and modifications that are being proposed in House Bill 2257 to the current statute. Is there any discussion? Question of staff? Yes, Representative Hass, Representative.
No question. I was just wondering about what you thought about moving this to the consent calendar.
If it could go, yes, sir. Let's pass it and then move that to the consent calendar.
Then are you ready for motion?
I am. Representative Hass moves that we move House Bill 2257 to the floor of the House of Representatives with a due pass recommendation. Is there any objection? Hearing and seeing none, I won't do a roll call, but recognize Representatives Esquivel having been called out to another committee meeting. And here's Representative Esquivel. He is present. Let's go ahead and do a roll call, and we will excuse Representatives Boquist and Olson other House business.
Those in favor of House Bill
2257, say aye.
Representative Felicio. Aye.
Representative Kong.
Aye.
Representative Riley.
Aye.
Vice Chair Berger?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hess?
Aye.
Chair Butler?
Butler votes aye. House Bill 2257, having received the necessary aye votes, is passed to the House of Representatives. Due pass recommendation. Representative Hass now moves that House Bill 2257 be placed on the consent calendar of the House of Representatives. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered. Consent calendar. We will close the work session on House Bill 2257. Colleagues, I mentioned 2868 that we were scheduled. I'm going to open a work session on 2868 and recognize for the record that there are some amendments on 2868 which are not present. And we will reschedule 2868 for a later date. With that, I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2868. We are scheduled for a work session on House Bill 3233. I'm opening the House work session on House Bill 3233. That bill is still under consideration and discussion. With that, I will close the work session on House Bill 3233. We're scheduled for a public hearing on House Bill 2199 as engrossed. I am opening a public hearing on House Bill 2199 as engrossed. Is it y'all?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2199 moves oversight of the vertical housing program to the Oregon Housing and Community Service Department. It allows partial exemption to vary in proportion to the floor space that is allocated to low-income residential use, so that potentially each floor of a building could be used for both residential and commercial purposes. It allows the land value of the property to be included in the partial exemption. Now, under current law, the city or county may sponsor a vertical housing zone that must be approved by the Economic Development or Community and Development Department. The zone must be in an urban core area or light rail transit station. And a vertical housing project is defined currently must satisfy certain criteria. And one of that, it is different. Each project, in order to qualify for a partial exemption, the project must be constructed or rehabilitated on a group of buildings in which the ground floor of each building at a minimum is allocated to commercial use and the remaining floors are allocated to residential housing for persons or families with income no greater than 80% of median income. The change here between the current law and the proposal is that apparently the program has not invited a lot of participation. I don't know that there are any projects right now. And partly the explanation I've had is that some of the developers would prefer to have mixed use. I want to use that term loosely because land use planners have a special name for that. But if there can be a portion of each floor perhaps committed to commercial as opposed to the ground floor being commercial with all other floors being residential, this might invite more participation. For example, on the second floor or third floor, perhaps if it's a residential community, perhaps someone would put a workout, a business where you have a gym, something like that, on the second floor, which would be a commercial use. It might be really nice to have the building designed that way, but under current law, it wouldn't work for this program. So it's trying to introduce a little more flexibility into the design structure, and so what they've come up with as a substitute is a way to measure qualified floors as opposed to real floors, and there's a formula for that that's proposed in the bill. And the only difference I can see other than that between current law and the proposal is that the land value of the property in this particular, the 2199, would be included in the partial exemption, where under current law it's not.
Question, Richard?
Not a question, really, but I remember the formation of this bill 4 years ago, I think it was.
Yes,
because
I remember.
I think the goal was trying to get at urban sprawl and encouraging development up instead of out. And it's not working out all that well yet, but I think it would make some sense to say, well, yeah, it shouldn't just be limited to residential. Anyway, that's my initial take.
Representative Riley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There is another change in this law, having heard this in my other committee, and that is in previous law, it had to be all multiple-story buildings, and in the current bill, it's changing that to at least one of the buildings has to be multi-story.
Okay. I hope we'll hear testimony on this. We're about to hear testimony. Any further questions of Mary and staff?
How about John Fletcher and John Walgren from Oregon Housing and Community Services? Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is John Fletcher, and I'm a policy analyst and legislative coordinator for Oregon Housing and Community Services. And we're here today to speak in favor of House Bill 2199A on vertical housing. I appreciate that summary that the legislative revenue staff has given. Let me clarify a couple of things with respect to the differences between our current law and what we're proposing. One of the differences clearly is that the responsibility for the program is being transferred from economic development to our department. The reason for that is just that all the parties involved agree that we have more experience working with housing and monitoring housing over time. These exemptions, when they are enacted, will be in place for 10 years, and there will need to be ongoing monitoring of those projects to verify that they are still residential occupied. And in the case of the new bill, there's affordable housing components that come into play. We have experience with that, and economic development generally focuses on industrial type development, and they saw it as a better fit. So they suggested that maybe that be moved to our department, and we agreed under certain conditions, if we could help make the program better, that we would take that on. So that's the first thing, is the move of the program to our department. Secondly, as we looked at taking on this program, we wanted to clarify and eliminate some of the problems and make it more effective. As we studied it, it's been in place since 1999, and not a lot of projects have come forward under this exemption. So in talking with economic development, talking with project developers and assessors and Department of Revenue and DLCD, we've learned a lot about this program and the things that we might need to do to make it more effective. So we've made some technical changes in the statute that appear in 2199A. Some of these are designed to eliminate potential lawsuits in determining the formulas. The formulas have been clarified so that the assessors and our department, as we work with these projects, it will be more clear just what exemption applies. And as has been mentioned, another difference that's in the current bill is that there's more flexibility in what kinds of projects can qualify for the exemption. Instead of just having a model of a project that has an entire first floor be commercial and then subsequent floors be residential or other use, we can now consider for the exemption projects that may have commercial on the first floor and part residential or part other use on the first floor, or maybe the commercial is on the second floor, or other configurations depending on a particular project. This alone would help more projects qualify. We've kept the provision where communities have the option of designating the zones so they can determine pretty much where these exemptions will apply. It's all voluntary, and they don't have to have any of this supply in their city if they don't want to. And so those provisions still apply. One thing I need to clarify just a little bit, the new bill does not automatically grant any exemption on the land portion. It may apply to a project if they've included affordable housing in part of their mixed-use development. So they may have a portion of their project that is residential and a portion that is affordable housing residential. It's only on the affordable housing residential that they get a partial exemption on the land. And every project may not have that component. But that is a change in the law. The affordable housing land partial exemption is new and doesn't exist currently. But we feel that was an important piece to add, since there are many communities that also struggle with the problem of providing enough affordable housing, and that is a statewide problem, that we thought those that can build those kinds of features into their project, that should be maybe an extra incentive for them. And so we've built that in. Again, that's voluntary, and every project may not need to have that. And so those are some of the differences. We continue to try to look at the program and find ways to make it more effective. We're going to have to revise the administrative rules. If this comes to our department, we're setting up a work group with cities, counties, assessors, DLCD, economic development to jointly develop those rules. And in fact, in recent weeks, even since our last hearing, we've been in discussion with the assessors. Now, I think if you hear testimony from them this afternoon, they'll be mentioning one thing that they thought of that could help bring accountability to this program, and that deals with the sunset of the program. And we would be willing to accept that, or we'd be in favor of looking at a sunset in, say, 10 years of this program, just not because we want the program to end, but just so that we could come back and take a look at it if it is being effective. And so I think they're going to mention that in their testimony, why they wanted that. And our discussions with them, I think we come to the conclusion that we could support that as well, even though it's not currently in the 2199A bill. So with that, I'll end my remarks this afternoon. I appreciate being with you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have about the bill.
Questions for Mr. Fletcher? Doesn't look like. Nope. Mr. Walgren, do you have comments, or you're just...
My name is John Wargren. I manage the housing finance section, which is the sort of the program location for this, should it come to Oregon Housing. And in my current role, it's primarily financing, bond financing for Oregon Housing that I manage. And so I've been involved with John and the others in this process, and happy to answer any questions as well.
Any questions of the money guy? Thank you very much. Mike Swanson, is it Swanson? From the city of Milwaukee.
Good afternoon, Chair Berger, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mike Swanson. I'm the Milwaukee City Manager, and my business address is 10722 Southeast Main in Milwaukee. I appreciate the opportunity to come before you today to speak in support of House Bill 2199. This bill does a number of things, as you've just heard, the major one being the transfer of the Vertical Housing Development Zone program from the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department to the Oregon Housing and Community Services Department. The transfer of jurisdiction from OECDD to OHCS makes sense. OHCS is responsible for administration of housing programs, and therefore it's the logical administrator. I want to note that in making this recommendation, I hasten to add that it is not based on any dissatisfaction with OECDD. I've created a vertical housing tax abatement zone during their administration of the program, and I know that they've taken all steps necessary to implement the legislature's desire. It just makes good sense to assign the responsibility to the department that has the expertise. In addition to my support of House Bill 2199, I'd like to voice my support of the program itself. As Milwaukee City Manager, I've been actively involved in the creation of a vertical housing tax abatement zone. I believe that it is an economic development tool that works. Moreover, I believe it's a tool that can be readily used by small jurisdictions such as mine. For many years, Milwaukee's seen a minimum of new development. This is especially true of our downtown, which lost many of the businesses that once made it a center of activity. We know that our challenge is both to capture new investment while preserving the small town feel that makes it a special place within the urban environment. The Vertical Housing Tax Abatement Program has been an important tool in helping us to make that important first step. When Safeway officials announced the closure of the downtown store located adjacent to City Hall, the city negotiated an agreement that led to the purchase of the site by the city. With the goal of bringing people into the downtown, our vision was to locate a mixed-use commercial residential development on that site. While the studies demonstrated a market for housing in the downtown, we were an untested market. We knew that we would need to provide some incentives in order to interest qualified developers. The vertical housing tax abatement was available, and we employ it. The program has several advantages. First, from our perspective, it was easy to implement. This point is critical to a small jurisdiction like ours. Pursuant to the enabling legislation, we made application to OECDD for designation of the Safeway parcel as a vertical housing development zone. We also needed to give notice to taxing districts within that proposed zone of our intention to create the zone, an explanation of the exemption we were seeking to implement, and the process by which the district could opt out of the proposed zone. Although it was not required, I also visited with each of the larger taxing districts to answer their questions. None of them opted out, by the way. A second advantage is the program's flexibility. Note that we chose the area within which the tax incentive would be implemented, just the Safeway parcel. In addition, the statute provided many of the taxing districts with the flexibility to elect not to participate in the program. In the end, no jurisdiction chose to make that election. In my discussions with each of them, they cited the benefit they would receive from the increased value in the community. A third advantage of the program is the fact that it is limited in duration. It is a 10-year exemption. Thus, the developer has a financial incentive to make a commitment, and the participating jurisdictions know that there is a limit to the revenue that they will forego. A fourth advantage is the fact that the program offers only a partial exemption. The taxing districts do not lose all revenue during that 10-year period. Rather, the amount of the exemption varies with the size of the project. Now, permit me a few minutes to give you an example of the impact we projected when we first began working on creation of our zone. I noted that every taxing district elected to participate. However, we did have to sell the program to achieve that result. The staff of one jurisdiction, the North Clackamas Parks and Recreation District, did not recommend withdrawing, but they did wish to submit the question to the district's governing body, which is the Clackamas County Board of County Commissioners. I appeared before the board as they considered the question. In preparation for that appearance, I prepared the tables that I've attached to my written testimony, detailing the impact of the exemption on the city, the district, and on Clackamas County. Column 1 details the revenue that would be received if the program were implemented. Again, if the program were implemented, it's not a total tax exemption, it's a partial, and so there is still revenue accruing. Column 2 details the revenue that would be received if the proposed development were constructed without the abatement, and that assumes that the developer would have entered into the development without the tax abatement. Column 3 details the revenue that would be received if we simply remodeled the existing facility. And column 4 represents the revenue that the property was generating at the time, which of course was nothing since it was tax exempt. We owned it. In each case, there's a 10-year projection, which is the life of the program. Year 11 represents the tax revenue that would be received when the property was returned to the tax rolls at full value. The Board of County Commissioners elected to participate in the program. The last time I testified on behalf of this legislation, I was asked a question. Representative Riley was in attendance, asked a question about details of the development that's being proposed. And so I have attached this time some visuals of the proposed development so that I think the committee can get a better sense of what it is we're looking at. I might also state that I was interested, Representative has to be getting noted that that one of the reasons behind the program was to discourage sprawl, an attempt to encourage some building up. This will be the tallest building in the downtown, and we do have one other three-story building, but this will be a departure from what we've seen in the downtown, and I would suspect will in fact lead to the result that that you had suggested. We anticipate we're going to break ground this summer. We're fortunate to have a strong partnership between the city and the developer, Tom Kemper. We have many other partners who've contributed to making this a reality, including the Metropolitan Service District, Metro, OHCS, and yes, OECDD is the present manager of the Vertical Housing Tax Abatement Program. We look forward to a transition to OHCS, and we wish to thank OECDD for the part it has played thus far. Questions?
Thank you, Mr. Swanson, and for your testimony and for your pictures. questions? Did I understand that this is the first project under this program?
I don't know. We have created the zone. I understand. I think somebody mentioned a while ago that there were a number, perhaps, that were awaiting the transition, and I believe this is one of them. I don't think the developer is anticipating closing on the abatement until or unless the transition occurs. So we're poised to finalize it.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I had been told when I put the estimates together, the revenue estimates that there were three proposals had qualified previously and would have gone forward had the mixed use been available. I use that term loosely, mixed use development. And I understand that two identical projects will be constructed each year beginning in a, well, those are assumptions, but I understand three projects had qualified previously.
Okay. Thank you. Any further questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The Gil and David, the cities and counties.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Gil Riddell, Association of Oregon Counties. My purpose is simply to report to you conversations I've had with the assessors. They tell me that this program creates a heavy administrative workload, but they hasten to add that the engrossed is an improvement, that what is being done here is an improvement. They still wonder whether the benefits will outweigh the burdens and request, as proponents mentioned earlier, request a 10-year sunset simply for legislative review. You see the program, see if it actually is working. So that's our request, and that's the extent of my remarks.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Dave Barenberg from the League of Oregon Cities and just wanted to voice the League's support for this program. We also support the county assessors in asking for a 10-year review. We think that that would be beneficial. We think that this program provides an additional tool in the toolbox that local governments have for development, trying to achieve the goals of compact development, transit-oriented development, and really revitalizing downtowns. Will there be a mad rush of cities to use it? No. But will there be a number of cities that will find this a tool that will help their downtown? We think so, and I think you've heard that from the testimony from Mr. Swanson from Milwaukee. We think that it really does go along with what we often talk about, that every community is really different. So just having additional tools really does help to achieve some of the goals that cities have. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions and urge that when you have a work that you have a work session and move the bill forward. Yeah. Thank you.
Questions for Sal? Do you have questions?
No, he has questions.
Okay.
Just a comment, Madam Chair. I think it's totally reasonable to put in a 10-year sunset. And, you know, that question about whether the benefit achieves the cost is one that, you know, I think look at a much larger issue every single day.
That's for you. Me?
Yes. thank you. I will. I'm caught short here.
We need an amendment drafted for the sunset, and if that's done, that would be put into this bill in a way that you could support it.
And I don't sense that there would be any objection to that, so we will do that and proceed. Okay?
Thank you.
Any other questions? I will tell you, on a personal note, having served on the Salem Downtown Development Board for a number of years before my legislative service, that this issue of smaller communities, downtown revitalization, and folks moving back in is timely and seen as something that sort of as a savior of some of our central cores. And I'm sorry that this previously, this idea that obviously came out a few years ago was apparently either too complicated or not utilized or whatever, and I appreciate the efforts to make it something that is a more usable tool for our communities. So thank you very much for your work, and we will look to this later with an amendment with a sunset in it. Okay. If nothing else, I'll close this public hearing on House Bill 2199A. Anything else, Beth? And I'll close this House Revenue Committee, adjourn this House Revenue Committee meeting.
Thank you.